This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Just to give you a heads up, one of us is bound to say something not suitable for little ears. It is, after all, the 1 hour a day I spend away from my children. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, January 14th, the No Ma'am edition. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family blog, Dutch Dutch Goose, and I'm the mom to three littles, Henry, who's 8, Oliver, who's 6, and Teddy, who's 4. We live in Navarre, Florida.
I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, and mom to Naima, who is 7. We live in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Dan Coyce. I'm a writer at Slate. I'm the author of the book, How to Be a Family. I'm the dad of Lyra, who's 15, and Harper, who's 13, and we live in Arlington, Virginia.
This week, we have a question about whether anyone still uses titles of respect like sir and ma'am. Then we have a question from a mom whose husband wants to be a stay-at-home dad. She's worried this move will change their family dynamic, and she won't be as valuable anymore. On our Slate Plus bonus segment, we often talk about raising rebellious kids, but what if your kids love rules and you're the rebel? As always, we have triumphs and fails and recommendations. Jamila, do you have a triumph or fail for us today?
This is probably like the 7th or 8th time that I've used my child as a triumph. So it's an evergreen one that my kid is awesome, and I'm taking a little bit of credit for that. Naima, if you so much as suggest that, like, one day when she gets, you know, as she grows up, she's going to, like, marry a man, she gets very offended by that. And it's not so much that she's like, hey, I'm clear that that's not what I want to do. It's how on earth could we know my orientation when I'm only 7 years old? Like, that's Naima's energy. She's just like, or girl, we don't know. Yeah, and, like, the door is very open to her. We've made it incredibly clear to her, like, if you do know, you are more than welcome to share. Like, this is not a space in which, you know, we're not investing in what the answer is, just supporting you through it, right? Like, if you like cishet men, you're going to need a lot of support and a lot. But, you know, we're not casting votes here. And so I don't think it's that. It's just, she just is very, like, this is the same kid who really guided me for gendering the Easter Bunny, right? Because, like, Santa Claus, we know his gender because we've been told his gender, but we've never been told who the Easter Bunny is. So how dare you assume? And it's just, I don't know. There's something in how open I think that she seems to be to the world that really dazzles me. But also, I know that this is Naima demonstrating her commitment to her politics. Like, I know her. You know what I mean? Like, I speak her language. Like, I get that this is, on some level, it is a bit performative, you know, but not in a bad way. It's just like, I want you to really know that I am very serious about the fact that all things here are equal, that everyone deserves to be who they are. And I want to be a part of that. I want to make sure my friends know that I'm a part of that. And I just think she's really awesome for it. So perhaps this is Naima's triumph. And my triumph is sharing space with her and getting to hear her say these things in real time.
If we can't take credit for how awesome our kids are, what the fuck can we take credit for?
What are we doing?
Good triumph.
I think that's great.
Thank you.
Dan, how about you? Triumph or fail?
I also have a triumph, though it will require some backstory. 25 years ago, our friend Claire told us a story from her teen years, and she was at some kind of family event, and they were celebrating the birthday of like of some 5-year-old cousin at this family event, and everyone was dressed up fancy. Maybe it was like a Christmas party or something. Because everyone was so fancy, the little girl was doing this like funny hoity-toity accent, where she'd be like, oh, don't you just love my dress? Anyway, so they served this birthday cake and the kid just started talking about how happy she was about her birthday cock. Oh, I can't wait to blow out the candles on the cock, she kept saying. And everyone else at the party was basically having a hernia trying to keep a straight face. And the kid's mom would be like, oh, yes, honey, it's a wonderful cake. And the kid would be like, moist, delicious cock. So anyway, for 25 years now, whenever there is cake being served, Ali and I will look at each other and very, very quietly say, moist, delicious cock. And then we will laugh. But of course, we've not told this story to our children because that would be inappropriate. But anyway, on my birthday, Harper and Ali made a cake. It truly was a moist and delicious cake. So we figured they're 15 and 13. It's time to tell them the story. Yeah. So we told them the story. They loved it. They could not stop laughing. Perhaps it was inappropriate, but let me remind listeners that all questions of appropriateness in this home have been thrown out the window because we now watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend,
yes,
a show where they sing about period sex nearly every episode. Anyway, the reason I feel this is a triumph is because exactly 1 week later, it was one of the last days of winter break, and Harper was so bored that she was flipping through old photo albums and just laughing at her clothes. But she came upon this photo of our friend Claire on her 23rd birthday posing with the cake that Alia had baked her that day, which she had decorated with the words moist, delicious cock. So it was a really good thing we'd already told her that story.
That is so perfect. And it's funny because when you said, of course, we haven't shared this with the girls because that would be inappropriate. I'm like, this has to be the time. This is the perfect time in their lives for them to receive
it. Really
this story
is fun. Like, I hadn't thought about this at all, but it really is fun to start revealing to them these weird stories that help remind them that once we were young and fun instead of just being old and boring.
It's very true.
Yeah.
It's very true.
Bringing them into the loop of inappropriate humor.
I mean, they don't truly believe it, but it's nice to fool them. Elizabeth, what about you? Triumph or fail?
No, I have like an epic fail. You know, I live in a house with four boys and three of them, they're all potty trained now, but three of them are terrible.
Good job, Jeff.
In the bathroom. Good job, Jeff. He was the holdout. Maybe it's because we're like in the house all the time. Somebody is peeing all over the seat, all over, everywhere. And I'm pretty sure that it's Henry. And one of the things with his PANDAS, which is the autoimmune encephalitis, the swelling of his brain, is that he has to go to the bathroom all the time. Well, I have like lost my mind about this. So first I relegated everyone else basically but me, and I guess Jeff sometimes, to the other bathroom, not the one attached to the front of the house. They have to go back and use the one by the little boy's bedroom. Then that still did not change things. Like every time I go in there, it's not even just like it's in the seat. It's like they are peeing everywhere. I have made them clean it up. I've done everything. So then I made the completely terrible and irrational decision to just tell them, fine, if you can't pee in the toilet, pee outside. That is clearly what they've wanted the entire time. They have now set up like a pee place in the front of the house and a pee place in the back of the house. And they are just going out the back door to go to the bathroom. So I've solved my own problem. We can never visit anyone's home ever again because while they don't pee in their pants, they pee just about everywhere else now.
You don't think that anyone you visited would kind of appreciate that? Like, I mean, these boys could be messing up my bathroom, but instead they're just peeing in my yard. Great job, boys.
You don't think it's weird when they're just like Henry's like going out the back door?
I mean, obviously it's weird. I'm just trying to give you a silver lining here.
I don't know how to even fix the problem because I don't really want them peeing back in the house. I don't know. So now I'm stuck with outdoor peers. We're camping for the rest of our lives. That's where this is.
So in a way, first you potty train them and now you have house trained them like dogs.
Yes.
Seems great.
Seems great. Well, anyway, now that we've solved all those problems, we are on to the business.
In Slate Plus, we'll be debating how rule-breaking parents deal with raising rule-loving kids. Here's a sneak peek of what you'll hear if you're a member of Slate Plus.
I'm like the Fonz, you know?
Can't you just understand that that's the appropriate level of rebellion? Fonz level?
Fonz level. Little tattoos, little dark lipstick, whatever, no problems, you know, like we're not hurting people out here.
To hear segments like this and get ad-free podcasts, sign up for Slate Plus. It's just $35 for your first year. It's a great way to support all of your favorite Slate podcasts, and you won't hit a paywall on the site, so you can keep up with all of Slate's journalism. If you'd like to support Mom and Dad Are Fighting, go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today. Also, sign up for Slate's parenting newsletter. It's the best place to be notified about everything Slate publishes about parenting, including Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Ask a Teacher, Care and Feeding, and much more. It's a fun personal email from Dan each week right into your inbox. So you can sign up for that at slate.com/parenting email. Finally, if you want to talk to other parents, join our parenting group on Facebook. It's super active. We also moderate it so it doesn't get too out of control. Search for Slate Parenting on Facebook, answer the questions, and join us there.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's get on to our listener question. It's being read, as always, by the remarkable Shasha Leonard.
Hi, Mom and Dad Are Fighting. I grew up the child of a Southern mom, and as an Army brat, I was raised to say sir and ma'am to adults, out of respect. It was always my plan for my children to do the same. Now I have a 2-year-old son, and as I look to be a parent who teaches inclusivity and honors a broader understanding of gender, I'm struggling with what ways to denote the respect one would give to an elder person or adult, but also without assuming or misgendering someone. Has our society evolved beyond communicating respect with titles like sir or ma'am as a result of our evolving understanding of gender? I think the answer might be yes, and I'm possibly unreasonably sad about that. Are there terms similar to sir or ma'am that I can teach my son and any future children that will be appropriate for all folks? Or should I just teach him to be respectful without using any terms at all? Thank you.
Jamila, do you have any thoughts for us?
You know, this is tricky. I will say, as progressive and thoroughly modern as I like to believe myself to be, there are some old school traditions that in certain contexts I enjoy or I find appropriate. You know, ma'am and sir are really a matter of assessing if these words are appropriate for the situation. It takes a long time to just develop that instinct to realize, like, when do I need to use these words because the person I'm speaking to is going to want to be addressed that way? When do I not need to use these words because I'm unclear if the person who I'm talking to will take kindly to them? If they are addressing an elder and they have been introduced to this person as Mr. So-and-so or Ms. or Mrs. So-and-so, that is a safe time for them to assume that they can refer to them as sir or ma'am. And those are words that in most contexts, if the person you're speaking to does not want to be addressed as sir or ma'am, and again, this is, you know, after being introduced to someone by name, not just simply looking at them, they will tell you that they don't want to be called sir or ma'am. I've had people tell me, you know, don't call me ma'am, call me by my first name. They'll make it clear to you how they want to be addressed. You also have to teach your child, and you know, you have a 2-year-old. You're not going to get to all of this super quickly, but as you're developing their way of communicating with the world around them, you are, or with people in the world around them, I should say, you have to teach them to ask questions of people about how they want to be addressed, how they want to be treated. There's not ever going to be a universal standard, right, for how people want to be engaged. Not everyone who identifies as a woman wants to be called ma'am. I don't like being called ma'am at times. And I will admit that that has to do with my fear around aging, which is, you know, just a byproduct of our society. But what will matter is that, can I tell that this person is being polite to me? Yes or no? So I think your focus should be less about titles and more about, is your child able to politely communicate with people? There are gender neutral titles.
What are they? I was racking my brain and could not come up with a gender
neutral
one.
There's mix, which is MX, right? And then there was
right,
one
but
that's
not a
like,
substitute for sir or ma'am. That's the thing you put at the beginning of a
right.
name.
There's nothing for sir or ma'am that I've been able to find. That's what I'm saying. Like, if I tell you I'm Miss Lemieux, then you can safely assume I'm ma'am. If somebody tells you that they're Mix Lemieux, then you should assume that they don't want to be addressed as sir or ma'am. That's the point that I'm trying to make. We don't have a third option yet that I know of. And I did actually spend a good amount of time trying to do some research on this because I was interested. It seems that we should have one. And I think that we will evolve past sir and ma'am. Sir has often been conferred to a very limited amount of sirs, right? Some people were boy, you know, and had to refer to people younger than them as sir. So there are a lot of people that are not into these words because they have such complicated history. So I know I'm rambling a little bit, but I think focus more on teaching your child to be kind, open, attentive to what people are trying to tell them about who they are and how they want to be addressed.
One thing you said, Jamila, that struck me was, you know, you don't like getting ma'amed, you know, for reasons having to do with not loving the aging process in some ways. And I think a lot of people share that, like, definitely no one wants to be ma'amed by like the 25-year-old at the grocery store or something.
Yeah.
But I think it reads a lot different coming from a little kid. And you said yourself, you know, unless you're a child, I don't want to hear ma'am from you. And my sense is that it's very hard for me to imagine someone being more offended by the incorrect term of respect than they are impressed or delighted that a little kid is using it and directing it to them in first reference. And I agree that most people, if they don't want that term to be used on them, will kindly and cheerfully say, call me Dan or whatever. But I'm inclined to think with a kid, at least in the first couple of years, it does not seem like that big of a deal for me for the kid to sort of, in those situations when you, as you say, when a child is introduced to an older person as Mr. Whomever or Ms. Whomever, to sir or ma'am them, like the risk of damage seems very low when it's coming from a four-year-old. And the ease of correction is very high. And as a kind of simple shorthand for a kid that little to get in mind that in our family, we treat our elders with a certain kind of respect and politeness. I think sir and ma'am are very useful in that way. And you can help in the guidance. You can help model the kinds of questions you can ask. You can ask new people in their lives. You know, we use honorifics in our family. Do you prefer sir or ma'am or a different honorific?
So I, one, grew up using sir or ma'am, have taught my kids to use them, but am struck when I read this question by this idea that if we teach a child, like at a young age, to say sir or ma'am, we are kind of unconsciously asking them to sort everyone into two groups. Mm. And so if I'm teaching them at four... Now, I'm saying all this, like, I've already done this to my children. So, help. If I've taught them all to sort them into these two groups and then later basically say, like, these groups are not real or this does not reflect, like, that's an old reflection. So I am, as I ponder this, like, well, what am I supposed to do? And what we've sort of done is try to teach them to use other honorifics when they're available and just to ask. I mean, my gut instinct on all of this stuff is just to always ask, even if that's embarrassing for me, because I don't know that it's better for me just to say, how would you like me to address you, or how would you like my children to address you, right? Dan gave much better language of how you could ask someone. But I just really worry about, too, like, I still do this because I was trained to do this as a child. So if we say, like, well, it's okay for a little kid to do it, but then eventually we want you to grow out of that, like, have we set them up to say, like, we'll sort everyone like this unless there are these others, instead of saying, like, well, maybe we shouldn't be sorting anyone into these categories. And so instead calling someone teacher, whoever, which is a more, like, in Dutch, that was a more literal translation of how we would address people, was just, like, with their title and their name. I mean, they do have a miss and mister, but you would say, like, you know, teacher Dan or whatever.
Wait, could you be like social media influencer Steve?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't
it's,
know.
In Dutch, that's probably all one word. Social media influencer.
Yeah, exactly.
I love this.
I totally see where you're coming from. And I'm really torn between the sort of like ideal world it seems like we're heading towards and the realities of the world right now. As it stands, nearly every kid I've ever met went through a period in young childhood in which they were just absolutely obsessed with who were boys and who were girls. And that's very developmentally appropriate and expected. And we understand that that is a thing that kids do. We did when our kids were in that age. We would try to make clear that those aren't the only two options and that there are other options. And gradually, as they got older and started to understand those things, they understood that a little better. But we didn't like view it as a crisis necessarily that they had this at four ironclad belief that we would eventually mold into a more sophisticated version of what the actual truth is. Like, that's true of all kinds of things when you're three or four. Those views generally evolve, and we, as parents, we help them evolve. And the views do no harm, I don't think, when they're three or four, and are a developmentally appropriate way for kids to start thinking about these things.
I just feel like you don't give kids all the fruits and say, sort these into apples and oranges.
Right.
Like you say, there are a variety of fruits and they all have different names.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, if we need to sort them, we need to sort them into all the categories. I mean, I, like I said, I have not done well at this and I feel like I'm struggling and my kids are still young and, you know, and Dan, your kids have clearly, like, they're not running around sorting everyone into boy or girl, regardless of what they ask for. So I think you're right that there's not like a crisis, but I just think that sometimes these things we do set the standard, and then we have to come back and say, like, but that's not exactly true. Like, our understanding is that it's more of a, you know, like, spectrum. And I know, like, for us, sorting into boys and girls, we've always just said, like, well, that's your genitalia. Like, what you are interested in is, like, which people have a penis and which people don't have a penis.
Our kids should be asking people when they meet them in the supermarket.
Right, of course. I mean, mine have.
Right.
That is interesting, though, because I think about, like, because I hope that we evolve past it being, you know, expected that, you know, that this is naturally what children do when they become aware of their genitals. And perhaps if we were just fascinated with being penis people versus vagina people versus people who have both or people who have neither, you know, or I shouldn't say versus, but like, you know what I mean? Like, if those
you just
are the,
like that, that is different. Those are the different types of genitalia available to humans.
Yeah. Like, and perhaps that grouping would make us more empathetic to one another because it would, you know, bring together people from different gender experiences, you know, through talking about menstrual cycles or talking about penetrative sex. I don't know, but I feel like there's two things at hand here. There's the not wanting to perpetuate this thing that, like, Elizabeth, I really appreciate you said that we have to go back and undo so much of what we teach our kids about gender, right? And, like, from the very beginning, we have to work to, and I say we, you know, including myself, that we have to work from the point in which we become aware of it, just do less work that's going to require us to have to double back. You know, like, as much as I kind of roll my eyes and feel frustrated that I have so many friends and so many, I shouldn't say so many friends, a couple of friends and a number of Karen Feeding letter writers who do become my friends in my head, especially during the pandemic, that talk about no pink, no princess stuff. And there is, on one level, it's like this can become misogyny really quickly in the service of gender neutrality. But also, I understand not wanting to enforce that grouping in that way, right? I think it's unfortunate that we associate that with girl things as opposed to, you know, things that are typically coded as boy things and very easily, you know, that we'll call gender neutral. But the other thing happening here is, I think, the formality piece. The frustration being not just that I don't want to offend, which is incredibly important, but also what is the other option? Because people are deserving of these titles, right? And so I think that that is also something that, like, when I think about how sir and ma'am are used, and I think about, like, who's been able to demand that sort of reverence, if you will, or I should say that sort of respect, and who hasn't, I think that those titles are going to be increasingly less important in our society, and that we're going to just get better at having other ways to show people that we respect them.
I completely agree with you. I struggle, though, with, it's such a easy way to show my kids or just the person, like, I respect what you're doing, or I respect this thing you're doing. Because I find I use it a lot, even in just like interaction with other adults, particularly people that are helping me. It is a way for me to address them in a way that says, I really respect your job and what you're doing, and that you're doing this for me very quickly, right? And to also demonstrate to my kids standing there, like, this is someone with some authority.
Do you think possibly because you all are a military family that it's a little bit more just kind of like a natural colloquialism for you all?
Definitely. Like, I mean, Jeff calls his superior sir.
Yeah.
And people call us sir and ma'am on base. Like, that's not uncommon. Even though, like, you know, we try to be like, spouses don't carry rank, like, I'm a nobody. It's not uncommon for someone who would be younger, who would be accompanying their spouse, they would also address me as ma'am. And that just happens, right? And the kids see that. And I think that's why, you know, I struggle with it. You know, it keeps some sense of respect and being able to do that. And also, I think in the military structure, it allows them to, like, disagree with someone at the same time as showing that respect, you know, being able to say, like, you know, but sir, like, I still respect where you are, but I have this differentiating opinion.
Do women officers get addressed as ma'am, yes, ma'am?
Yes.
Ma'am. I've never heard that in my life.
Ma'am, yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Like, I want to hear someone say it. Yeah.
And I mean, the advantage, too, is that you can use the rank, like the military could very easily go. They can also address each other
captain
by rank. Captain, yeah, colonel, what, and that can stand in, right? And I do actually, now that you say that, a lot of women use the title, like they use colonel.
That makes sense.
But yeah, it would be ma'am, yes, ma'am, yeah.
Yeah, because they don't want to get ma'amed by a bunch of 20-year-olds.
Right.
right. That would be triggering. You imagine it's your 30th birthday.
Exactly.
Elizabeth is right, though, that it's an incredibly useful shorthand in social situations to convey instantly. Basically, I'm not going to be a dick, or I'm trying really hard not to be a dick. Like, when you sir or ma'am someone at the grocery store or wherever, it's just a way of instantly conveying respect that is meant, I think, unconsciously or consciously, to color the rest of the interaction between you.
Yeah.
And that's a very useful shorthand to have. And so it strikes me that maybe the issue here really is that there is just isn't a non-gender specific version, and that we need to come up with
Something that we could all use. Like, right,
I've been brainstorming.
Add a third. Okay, you have some.
I got some options. Okay. Maestro.
I love it.
Your Highness. I guess there's all kinds of connotations with that.
Your Highness.
I wonder if there's one we can pull from the military. Like, what if you just called everyone Captain?
Yeah.
Went around calling everyone Captain.
Yeah.
People would think that was fucking adorable.
That would be really, he could go viral.
Yeah.
Like, you can make like a super cut, like a TikTok.
I mean, for the kid, Your Majesty would also be viral.
That's
true, right?
Really good.
Like, yes, Your Majesty.
Yes.
Or Your
Thank
Honor.
You. Finally.
Your Honor?
Finally, yeah. Someone recognizes me.
The teacher's like, this is the best kid I've ever
had. Right.
One last question. Did you all have to call your parents sir, ma'am? I don't even remember being taught to use those words at all by anyone. I just picked it up.
Did you refer to your parents as sir or ma'am, or just other relatives?
I think of sir or ma'am. I think of talking to the police, honestly. Like, I think of authority. I mean, not authority, but like, it just wasn't used in my, I'm sure there was some point where I got like yelled at really bad, and my dad probably threw in a like, I don't even know, like, or maybe I threw in a yes, sir, just kind of out of, you know, because of the theater of the encounter, because that's what most of like me getting yelled at was. But I don't feel like I had to use those words.
We're Northerners. Elizabeth, you sure did.
I definitely use them for now, whether I, you know, I'm going to be hearing from my parents about this, whether they asked me to do it or not. But I mean, I specifically remember having to call other people's parents sir or ma'am, like right. that was expected. And I know that I've done it to my mom because it is still a, like, when I'm talking to them sometimes, like if they've given me a request, I'll just say yes, ma'am. Like it's not, you know, like that's just the automatic is a yes, ma'am or yes, sir.
When Lyra was born, we asked Alia's dad what he wanted his grandfather name to be. We were like, Beeman, what do you want the kids to call you? And he goes, they can call me sir. So that was his grandfather name. It was just sir. They just be like, sir, I peed on the floor or whatever.
Did it stick?
Oh yeah, it stuck. That's what they still, he has passed away, but that's what they still call him when they talk about him.
My mom is a judge and we tried really hard to get the kids to call her the judge instead of grandma. <Judge. laughs> Like grandpa and the judge, but yeah. it never took.
Oh,
I love
really
that.
Good,
I want to be called the judge.
Okay. I like it. Well, have we solved the problem? Maybe.
Absolutely.
Have we muddied the waters? Definitely. But thank you for your letter. Hopefully this helps. I guess, worst case, you at least know that we're all here with you wondering what the future holds and what to do next. If you'd like us to ponder your problems, you can email us at momanddad@slate.com.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's hear our second listener question, once again being read by the extraordinary Sasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, my husband desperately wants to quit his job and stay at home with our 3-month-old and 3-year-old. He hates his industry and feels burnt out. Additionally, his company doesn't seem very concerned about COVID and insists that everyone return to the office soon. He is a super dad, and I envy how he can engage with our 3-year-old. I can see why he thinks this decision would be great. We are fortunate that this isn't as much of a financial decision as we continue to live comfortably on my income alone and save sufficiently for retirement. And my job is pretty secure. My biggest concern is the impact this change will have on our dynamic as parents, and that I will be left disappointed. Our current parenting dynamic follows fairly normal gender stereotypes. I take on much of the work of the family, all meals, cleaning, baths, shopping, etc. He often gets to be the fun dad and plays while I complete chores. He does the yard work, shoveling, and cleans the cat box. He says he would take on more household responsibility if he stayed home, and I believe he will try. He also plans family outings and researches things to do when he is alone with the kids. But he hasn't ever spent an entire day home alone with 2 kids. Admittedly, I'm worried about losing my sense of value to the family, and I'm a little bit of a control freak. What do we need to consider, discuss, and come to an agreement on if this is the path that we choose? Thanks for your advice. Afraid of disappointment.
This is a fascinating question. And I think there are a lot of different things that we ought to talk about in this, but I want to start on something that this letter writer says right at the end, which is that she is worried about losing her sense of value to the family if she gives up these things that she is doing. And I would like to push back on that a little bit. I'm confused as to why she is worried about her status within the family, because currently her status is that she earns way more money than her husband, but she still has to do like 90% of the housework. And her status sucks. So why on earth would you not want to just seize this opportunity and try to change the current situation, which I'm sure there are some things about having that status that you enjoy, but also is just an immense pain in the ass. What I really want to know from you two is, if you believe that she should leap at this opportunity as I do, how explicit should the conversations and negotiations about what being the stay-at-home dad means should be? Like, how explicit should those conversations be? I am team extremely explicit, but I'm very curious what you guys think.
Well, I think the fact that she signed it afraid of disappointment makes it pretty clear that these need to be very explicit conversations, because she's basically saying she's afraid of being disappointed at her husband's parenting.
Is that it? I thought it was maybe afraid of being disappointed at losing her self-perceived status.
I think it's probably both. Part of it, yeah, I think it's both. I understand. I think it's really great. I think explicit is the way to go also, because she's very explicit. Like, she's admitting, you know, I don't think a lot of people would feel comfortable admitting that they are insecure about their status in the family, you know, under circumstances like this, that so many other people would call a dream. This is literally my dream. This is a working woman's dream.
Right.
Like, if you enjoy your job and you make enough to keep your family, like, if you want to continue working and you have somebody who takes all of this other labor off of your plate, people literally dream about this. I think that the other concern is how her husband is going to perform in this new role, right? Because she's a control freak and he's never spent a day alone with the kids. So this isn't just, you
Did
know.
You guys hear just like flashing sirens going on in your head?
Yeah, totally.
Like, yes, they did.
Well, in a non COVID world, we just tell her to go away, right?
Right.
Like, go away, see how it goes.
Go to Sonic. Go to Sonic. For a whole day. Just drive for a day and let your husband be alone with the kids. But you're going to need to have some very, I think there may be, some, I don't want to say training because it's inappropriate, but I do think that since you have done the lion's share of this work, part of the reason those negotiations are going to need to be so specific and pointed is because he may need some guidance in doing some of this work.
I think she's afraid of being left out, that all of a sudden it's going to become dad and the kids, and she is going to be like the person who works and comes home and is not part of any of that. And I think that is not true. Like, you can definitely be gone and be back and be part of the family. But Dan, to go back to your point about how explicit, I think you need to be very explicit in the conversation, but I also think that you need to be whatever you have in that initial conversation needs to be available for multiple revisions, because as people set into their roles and things change, like how you can engage and be in the house changes. And I mean, we found that even just with like, depending on like what I'm doing being stay at home and what his work role looks like constantly revisiting whose jobs are whose and how do we do this. And everyone always feels like, I think, that they're doing all the things, right? That's like
always.
Human nature.
Always.
And so just being able to say like, okay, well, what can I take off your plate? Because he does need to do more of the stuff that he's home. But if those kids are home too, like how much of the time do you want him engaging with the kids? And how much of the time do you expect him to be doing other stuff around the house where the kids are not as engaged, right? Because that is the balance of being at home is like, yes, you're home, but anytime you're doing an additional task, you are not having FaceTime with the kids. So figuring out kind of where that line is as well.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And thinking explicitly about not only, well, I want, you know, if you're going to be home, you need to take on these things that I typically do, but also thinking about that balance between the sort of housework and the parenting work. And often they overlap, but often there's a clear delineation. You literally can't do one while you do the other is really valuable. It's good that she recognizes that she is a little bit of a control freak. And I think it will be useful for her, especially in the first few months of this new arrangement, to be very carefully monitoring herself for those tendencies. She's going to have to, for example, adjust her expectations at first for how clean everything is going to be, probably. Not to be too gender essentialist about things, but that is likely the case. But just in general, understanding that he's very gung-ho about it now, but there are likely going to be a lot of times in the coming months where he is worried about doing things wrong. And that, in fact, in most cases, for almost every task that he's going to take on, there's no actual wrong way to do it. There's just doing his best to the ability and standard that he can. And it is up to you in some cases, letter writer, to decide how am I going to respond to the times when his standards are different from mine. And being open about that in conversation with him and then being careful to notice that in your own responses, I think will be really useful over the first few months.
I think, too, when you have these conversations, it's really important that you have them during time that is set aside for these conversations, because I find like if because it is what I do, conversations that involve like those sort of things feel like work reviews. And if it's not in kind of like a safe space, right, where we're like, hey, we're going to talk about the schedule and how things are working, I can get really defensive about it because I feel like what is being said is like, these were your jobs and you didn't do them, as opposed to it being more of like, hey, this is our house and these things are not working and let's talk about why they're not working, right? So I would just say, like, in your same vein of like, keep those things, keep a list if you have to, but set aside time to talk about those things with the understanding of like the things you delegate to him get to be done his way. They don't get to be done your way by him. So if the goal is like that the, you know, dishes aren't sitting out when you come home, it doesn't really matter whether they're put in the dishwasher or hand washed or whatever, as long as if the agreed upon thing was that, you know, by the end of the day, there are no dishes in the kitchen, you don't get to like come home at lunch and say, well, the dishes are everywhere. Like, you don't get to make those decisions, the person doing them. And I know, like, in the things that I have delegated to Jeff around the house, that's one of the pitfalls I fall into is like, well, he's not doing it my way, so it's not getting done. But it does get done. Do I really have time to be nitpicking about that? But I agree too, Dan, that I think the like best thing about this letter is that she knows it's going to be a problem. Because if you know it's going to be a problem, you can avoid the pitfalls. I also think like resounding, go for it. And I wouldn't worry about, she's worried about like, you know, what future might hold, all those sort of things. I think if this looks good for this moment in time and what we're going through and what your family is, do it. And if you need to make a change in the future, you make a change from where you sit. You can't always think about the long-term kind of ramifications, like, will it be easy for him to go back to work? What will I, like, if this seems good now and this is what you want to do, like, give it a try. And yes, maybe there are some consequences down the road, but you also had this time and you tried this and you got experiences, or it was like the best thing you ever did for your family and for your work.
Right. And you have the benefit of being one of the rare families that are in a situation financially where you can just try this out. And even if it doesn't work long term, you're basically going to be fine. Maybe it'll be hard for him to find a job if it doesn't work. But you guys are not going to be starving and you're still going to be contributing to your 401k. Like, you're going to be all right. And so yeah, I'm in total agreement that, especially given the circumstances of his job, get him the fuck out of that job.
Yeah.
Get him home where he is going to be contributing as much or more to the family as he has been without the risk of getting COVID in the workplace, and talk as clearly as you can about these things, but definitely seize the moment. Jamila, what do you think?
I agree. Do the thing. This is an amazing opportunity. The stuff that dreams are made of. Be intentional about creating ways for you to still participate in the fun of the family, that you're not only the person who's going out the door, you know, remotely or otherwise to go to work, coming home, eating your dinner and going to bed, that you're playing, that you're laughing, that you're caregiving, and enjoy not having to do 97% of the work to keep your family going.
Yeah. Don't you want to be fun mom? You finally get to be fun mom.
Fun mom is the best mom.
Well, good luck. And please send us an update. We definitely want to know how this works out. If you have a question for us, email us at momanddad@slate.com, or you can post your question to the Slate Parenting Facebook group. All right. Well, on to recommendations. Dan, what do you have for us?
I am going to display my older kid privilege with this recommendation. You guys are going to hate it. So our friend Allison lives in Delaware. This past weekend, we haven't seen her in a long time. So we just agreed to meet her sort of halfway between. We're just going to meet her in Baltimore. We're just going to walk around Fells Point and talk and look at the bay and eat takeout pizza or whatever. And I have to tell you that the exhilarating feeling of freedom that I felt as Ollie and I just drove up 95 with no kids in the car and went to a completely new city and saw a friend was totally overwhelming. And so this completely pedestrian outing was like the highlight of my month. So my recommendation, if you can find a way to do it, is go to a different city without your kids and go on a walk with a friend.
Jealous. All right. Yep. Jamila, what do you have for us?
So I'm reading a book right now called Pleasure Activism, The Politics of Feeling Good by Adrienne Marie Brown. And I think that for folks, though I will say it may be a lot to handle if you are new to reading feminist texts, not because it's hard to read. It's not an academic book. Some of the concepts may be a little bit unfamiliar, but for the most part, I think it could be a really lovely read for someone who, I mean, it's a great read for somebody who's been with the shit for a long time, but because there's so many people that are, I think, experiencing this progressive shifting right now, this progression toward gender equity and gender equality. And so it raises the question, how do we make social justice the most pleasurable human experience? So it's sex is certainly an important theme throughout the book, but it's about making yourself feel good, making others feel good, bringing good into the world, and obtaining a fulfilling life. And it does this by engaging the work of Audre Lorde and Octavia Butler. It is very much a Black feminist work of art. It came out in 2019. It's a fascinating read. It features a lot of voices in the text. It's not just the author herself. I will say the introduction to this book and how the writer talks about respecting gender pronouns and respecting how people want to be identified and engaged is a masterclass and perhaps something to check out for our first letter writer today in this moment in which we're rethinking a lot of things about race and gender and identity. So I strongly recommend it. Pleasure Activism, The Politics of Feeling Good by Adrienne Marie Brown.
That sounds great. I'm also recommending a book called Nijssen, Embracing the Dutch Art of Doing Nothing by Olga Mekking. And she's actually an acquaintance of mine and Dan's from our time in the Netherlands. And she wrote this book that's kind of in line with a lot of the other books, like the Huga book about sort of a concept from another country and how to embrace it here. But the book is like very charming and talks about all kinds of wonderful things about Dutch life, but specifically some ideas on how you can do this doing nothing, which in Dutch, like literally translates to doing nothing with purpose. And basically, they advocate embracing like sitting and letting your thoughts just kind of wander. And I know for me, that was a really challenging thing when it was first introduced to me, because I wanted to just like pick up my phone or like sit here or like force my brain to go somewhere. But just kind of this art of sitting there for not too long. They do warn that you can go down too many roads, and the Dutch don't like that. But just this art of doing nothing. So you can check out Nijssen, Embracing the Dutch Art of Doing Nothing by Olga Mekking.
It's spelled N-I-K-S-E-N.
That's important if you're looking for the book.
It's hard to find.
I was fine. So real quick, I have a breaking news update. So, I texted my mother during the first question asked, hey, did you teach me to say sir and ma'am? And she said, yes. I said,
like you've lost a little bit of your respect for your elders, Jamila.
Perhaps. And I said, to whom? And she said, teachers, elderly, and people who deserve respect. So we're going to have a follow-up call on this, because I just don't remember that happening. And I'm not saying it didn't. I'm not saying it should have. I just don't remember.
Well, that's our show. One final time, if you need advice, email us at momanddad@slate.com or post it to the Slate Parenting Facebook group. Just search for Slate Parenting. Also, if you haven't already, please subscribe. It helps us out and make sure that you won't miss an episode. And while you're at it, tell your friends about the show. Let's continue to grow this parenting community.
I wrote a poem for the credits.
This episode of Mom and Dad takes a few important people to make it rad. Rosemary Belson produces the show, and all of you listeners help it grow. My co-hosts are Dan Coyce, our expert dad voice, and Jamila Lemieux. Moms like her are few. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. These are the credits revamped.